On today's College Football Inquirer, two SEC quarterbacks. Well, maybe SEC quarterbacks. It basically all depends on what a court decides. That is college football in a nutshell in 2026. But Tennessee, waiting to hear about Joey Aguilar. Ole Miss, waiting to hear about Trinidad Chambliss. Those decisions could be made in state court this month. And that's how we settle quarterback competitions in the year of our Lord 2026. Plus, college football playoff dates for the 2026 season have been announced, and holy cow, is it a long stretch of playoff. Plus, I did my homework. I found a way to move the Michigan-Oklahoma game to week one, where there are very few good games, and Fox is probably desperate for a big noon game. I found a way. Surprisingly easy in a way that can only happen this year. A lot of only in 26 today on the College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Stephen Godfrey and Ross Dellinger. I'm Andy Staples. And guys, remember when we took public affairs reporting in journalism school and thought, well, I'm going to be a sports writer. I'll never use this crap again.
Oh, man.
I've used the word injunction.
Yeah.
So many, like, I need a schoolhouse rock that is injunction. What's your function?
Courts always sucked. Like, I don't want to speak for Ross. Maybe you liked it a little bit better. I didn't like courts. I loved cops, especially where I ended up in college sports. That shouldn't shock anybody. Loved dealing with cops. Loved dealing with lawyers. Didn't like courts.
I didn't have a stomach for cops.
Oh, yeah. Well, I grew up in a cop family. Contract law was the one that if I could go back to college and still end up in the healthy and thriving industry of journalism, I would go to the law school and take like audit contract law, because we've all been there when we're going through these myriad contracts. Like, but yeah, I rely on people smarter than myself, such as Ross, to discern what's going on in the court system right now.
And I rely on conversations with lawyers, which seems to be how I spend most of my day these days. But
Ross, but you know what's funny?
How it is.
The number one profession, and because I own a podcast company, I can tell you this, the number one profession of people who listen at a high volume ratio to college football podcasts, all lawyers. Lawyers, yeah.
I bet they all listen on
2x
speed too, so we sound like chipmunks to them.
you guys don't do that, do you?
Hell no.
No.
It's an affront to God, and I know a lot of like important people in the college football industry. They'll be like, yeah, I listen to your show, but it's so different to talk to you in person. And they're hitting 2x. That's insane.
Oh man.
I got a
crazy
text the other day from somebody who said, I thought you'd had some sort of medical event, and then I realized I was listening on 0.8
speed.
Oh,
accidentally. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I've been there before. It's an accident.
That. Yeah.
I like that, because then it's like Houston, it's chopped and screwed, right? It's like a, you know, Paul Wall. I'm into that. I think we should do it slower.
That's been the Slim Thug portion of our podcast. Well, right, let's talk.
I got pusher in last week.
Yeah, we did. Let's talk QBs and courts. So, Joey Aguilar in Tennessee, Trinidad Chambliss at Ole Miss, both of them now waiting for court hearings in state court, where if the judge, in both cases, a graduate, or well, at least holds one degree, in some cases two, from the school in question, decides to grant them an injunction, then they will get to play college football in 26. If the judge decides not to grant them an injunction, they will not get to play college football in 2026, and those schools will have to figure it out.
Yeah.
It is the strangest kind of quarterback competition I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. This year, I don't know. Do you guys know Phil Steele personally? Like, have you guys ever met him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, Andy, of course, Andy knows everybody. He's like the Jimmy Stewart.
A lot of Mountain Dews consumed by Mr. Steele.
So, is he a Mountain Dew drinker? I like that. Oh, yeah. Based on his font size, that tracks. I think in this year's Phil Steele preview, we should have a list of all of the judges in the state in the depth chart. That's useful information.
Yeah.
That's useful. Like what's your highest ranking alumni in the judiciary in your state? Because that's going to matter. Like, and if you're Vanderbilt, that might be bad, right? Like, because they're all going to be Vols.
Well, right. Yeah. Vandy has a good law school. Right.
Yeah, but they don't stay here. They go back to like New Jersey and Connecticut and stuff. You know, like I'm telling you, man, you need a good Deep South, like John Grisham level ass, like amount of like you got to stack your courts. So Alabama advantage, Ole Miss advantage, LSU weirdly advantage. They have everything at that school.
Yeah. But I think you get the same effect in Ohio, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. It's the states where things are split between multiple schools, where allegiances are split more, or where there are multiple law schools. Because sometimes one school has the law school and one school has the ag school.
Farmers versus lawyers, yeah.
Yeah, and the law
school
is
split in Alabama, right?
Does Auburn have a law school?
Auburn have a law school? No? Maybe not.
See, like in Florida...
I want to believe it's named after Bobby Lauder.
Yeah, in Florida, you've got Florida law grads, you've got Miami law grads.
Yeah.
I believe FSU has a law school. I know FSU has a med school now. So, you could get a little more split. But
wait. Hang on. Miami has a law school? This is not a bit.
Oh,
Miami has a law school?
God. Very good one. Yes.
Oh, man. For
Auburn does
not
have a law school, by the way.
Auburn does not have a law school. I just love the idea of Miami, like a Miami grad lawyer, given the general sort of culture around the history of the U. That's fantastic. That's amazing. I'm writing there's a Carl Hiaasen novel just processing in my head right now.
Well, we're talking Ole Miss law and Tennessee law right now I guess I'll start with the most recent news, which is Trinidad Chambliss, the Ole Miss quarterback, was denied the appeal of his eligibility waiver by the NCAA. He's trying to get an extra year. He is trying to retroactively get what the NCAA would call a medical hardship waiver for the 2022 season when he was at Ferris State. And they denied the waiver. Ole Miss came out with a very, very strongly worded statement saying, we're going to let him exercise all his legal remedies. And we already know what those are because obviously all of us talked to his lawyer, Tom Mars, who's been very active in college sports in the last few years. And so they've got a petition in state court in Mississippi. They've got a hearing coming up scheduled for next week that basically if the judge grants an injunction, and really this is not the judge ruling on the case, it is the judge essentially preserving things as they are, keeping one party from being harmed while the case is being hashed out in the judge's opinion. That's what the injunction would be for. I'm guessing the case does not get resolved before the end of the 26th season. So if the injunction is granted,
Trinidad
Chambliss is playing for Ole Miss. And if it's not,
this is fantastic.
Can you get Deuce Knight ready quick?
Yeah. It's like the Pavia thing, right? That was similar. And the NCAA had to just, they ended up granting a blanket waiver for all of those in Pavia's current situation, which, by the way, you can kind of go back to that case. For all of the start of all this. And I recall it was like 3 or 4 days before Christmas in December of 2024 when the NCAA, a week after the Pavia injunction, they decided to grant that blanket waiver. And I remember getting texts from people that this is not going to end well and that this could open the door.
But they had no chance in that case. And so I understand. So I'll explain. Let's explain the differences between Trinidad Chambliss's case, Diego Pavia's case that he won last year, the case is still pending, but that he got the injunction for last year.
He kneeled
and Joey
out.
Aguilar at Tennessee.
Aguilar's case is the most similar to Pavia.
Most similar, but not completely similar, and I'll explain why. So Diego Pavia's case, all Diego Pavia wanted was his JUCO year in 2020 to be treated the same way someone playing in the NCAA was treated in 2020. Remember, they got a blanket free year. It's like, hey, thanks for playing this year and keeping us all financially afloat. This year doesn't count against your eligibility.
Yes.
So that, like, if you played at Vanderbilt or if you played at Ferris State or if you played at Monmouth, you got a blanket year. If you played in JUCO, you didn't.
Let me insert something in any context. We might have younger listeners or people who aren't familiar. That was given by the NCAA because a lot of players were opting out because of health. Like Kenneth Gainwell, the running back at Memphis, is the one that came to mind because he I think he's in the pros now. He's still playing. A lot of players were saying like, hey, I don't know what the safety issue here is. I also don't know, am I going to play and is my team going to play 5 games this season?
Yeah.
So in the court of just rational thought, it would feel like for a player to then go from JUCO into the NCAA, that retroactively that would apply. Like that one feels less.
And that's why they did the blanket waiver because they knew they had no leg to stand on in that one.
Right.
But what's different in Joey Aguilar's case is he was not at JUCO in 2020. He was at JUCO in 2021. And So there's not that distinction between how JUCO players were treated and how NCAA players were treated. What Joey Aguilar, the Tennessee quarterback, who Tennessee would very much like to start this year, what he is arguing in court, and he just got granted a temporary restraining order pending a hearing next week. He said, basically, my JUCO year does not count. The NCAA can count NCAA years, but it should not count JUCO years against eligibility. Now, they always have counted JUCO years against eligibility.
Yes.
But they're saying you can't do that. And so the judge, in granting the TRO, wrote, plaintiff's case feels likely to succeed on its merits, which is a little preview of the injunction hearing.
Yeah, and we've seen several of those individual lawsuits from other players asking a judge the same thing. Like, don't count my JUCO years. In fact, there were the Patterson case, which mm-hmm. had five. I think most members of the Vanderbilt football team were asking a judge not to count their, I believe, some of this gets all runs together, but not to count their JUCO years. And the judge actually ruled in favor of the NCAA. And we've seen a lot of judges rule in favor of the NCAA on some of these. You know, there's been, give you a breakdown, there's been 55 eligibility mm-hmm. lawsuits filed against the NCAA in the last year since Pavia's case, 55. 26 have been going the way of the player, or I'm sorry, going mm-hmm. the way of the NCAA. They've been denied a preliminary injunction. 10 have been granted, and so the judge ruled in favor of the player. And then 8 have been dismissed, and 11 are still pending. So basically, the NCAA is winning 2 out of every 3. But what's happened recently, and what's happened with the Joey Aguilar case, and with Trinidad Chambliss, and with Alabama's guard, or Alabama's basketball player, Charles Bediako, is they're moving into state court where the filings are happening. We've talked about it, I know, in the past. So you can get like a local friendly judge. And mm-hmm. I think these local friendly judges are ruling more in favor of the player. Of the 10 injunctions granted by a judge, 6 of them have come in state court. So we're seeing a little more of lawyers going that direction.
Oh, and a correction on my Aguilar thing. He was in JUCO in 2019 and 2020. He played in 2019. 2020, his JUCO season was canceled. Okay. So, City College of San Francisco, 2019-2020. Diablo Valley, 2021 and 2022. Appalachian State, 2023 and 2024. Brief stop at UCLA for spring practice.
Totally normal trajectory. Then the Nico stuff happened.
Then they effectively made a trade.
They traded,
and now he's
yeah.
in Tennessee. So, guys, this is what's interesting to me about this, because I've said this for a while now. Like, basically, schools want to get old, stay old. Like, I don't understand why a hotshot freshman quarterback sign with these big schools anymore. Like, so Faison Brandon is a freshman at Tennessee right now.
Yeah.
Like, if Joey loses this thing, Faison Brandon has a chance to win the job. Like, he would be competing with George McIntyre. But, like, if Joey wins, he's the guy. Like, why'd you sign with them?
Well, okay, this is what I wanted to ask, because here in Nashville, where I live, Tennessee fans, I feel like I've proposed this to Vol fans. You had an unforeseen circumstance in this brave new world where Nico bolts on you. You've got to plug it in. You're in a bridge year. I thought Tennessee comported themselves extremely well. I think the Vanderbilt loss, because it's Vanderbilt, stings on the way out. Yeah. We talked about the Illinois bowl game. They, you know, they don't care. Illinois does, whatever. Based on the quarterback situation before we knew Joey was going to try and come back, you were facing another season in which Tennessee is stocked with five-star talent. Because like they have McIntyre. They have the new kid, Faison, right? Like two 5-stars. Is that right in the on-3 system?
Or? I don't know that McIntyre finished as a 5-star, but Faison Brandon definitely did. Yeah.
So you have two young, really, really talented quarterbacks. And what I said the last time I was doing Nashville radio was, and shout out to Will and Ramon, you really need a bridge quarterback. Is that what we're gonna see now? Are you gonna bring in a veteran guy out of the portal to like somehow get them? Like, do you remember? I don't know when like Eli Manning got drafted. They brought in Kurt Warner and they sort of created a 1 to 2 year transition in the NFL.
Alex Smith was the bridge for Patrick Mahomes with the
Chiefs. Exactly. Is that what we're gonna do? And if so, to your point, Andy, how many games do you start Joey Aguilar before you bring in one of those other kids? And like,
if you're winning, you keep starting Joey Aguilar.
You can't,
the job,
right?
Is to win games.
Yes. Yeah. Because the difference is in the NFL, you know, back in the day it was like, I don't know, there's 17 games now. So, you know, you drop one or two games before Halloween in the NFL, you're fine. You drop one or two games in college before Halloween, you got a serious problem on playoff eligibility. So I guess what I'm saying is that you can't really transition younger talent in with a veteran presence. But Andy, I'm going to throw it back to you. If you're a Tennessee fan, those two young quarterbacks objectively are probably better quarterbacks overall eventually than the guy you've got now. So you can't kick development down the road in perpetuity, or you're going to waste the talent.
But however, you can kick development around the, down the road in perpetuity if you want to just pay. Because
but at some point, Andy,
Tennessee was willing to pay, by the way. They were going after Sam Leavitt.
Yeah.
They were trying to get Ty Simpson to not go into the draft. They were willing to pay.
Well, then why are you signing up? Then why are you chasing a five-star quarterback?
I don't know.
Yeah.
why are the five-stars signing with them?
Is the next Arch Manning going to go to some like offensive heavy development program? Like is he going to go to like the next North Texas?
Yeah, I mean, this is a good kind of angle. Like, are we going to see the five and even four star sort of quarterbacks start to decide to go to the lower levels, fearing that if they go to some powerhouse program that they're going to be recruited over in the portal? I mean, we've seen it happen quite a bit. I mean, how about Miami's situation? They've had a backup quarterback on staff there that a lot of coaches on staff sort of liked, and he thought he was going to get his chance, yeah. And now he's not. So I don't know why these quarterbacks would go, except for the money, of course, to these powerhouse programs. And I wonder if we're going to see more of them go to like a North Texas, or maybe even like not to the G6 level, maybe even to an Arkansas instead of signing with somebody else.
Well, we're kind of seeing it with the Vanderbilt situation. Yeah. So Jared Curtis was going to Georgia. He was the number one quarterback recruit in the 26 class. He was going to Georgia. And then he flipped to Vanderbilt. Well, he flipped to Vanderbilt shortly after Diego Pavia said he was not coming back to Vanderbilt. And you don't take Jared Curtis. I'm assuming Jared Curtis is going to make significantly more at Vanderbilt because he's the presumed starter than he would have made at Georgia, where he'd be the presumed backup. So you don't do that unless you think you're going to start that guy.
We're just seeing an increasing... a decreasing window of patience with development. But even at the highest level, you know, Texas had offensive line problems this year, right? Mm-hmm. But they also had to get a premier legacy name quarterback reps. He had to play full games. He had to be involved for every snap on offense.
Quinn Ewers should have come back, everybody.
But so if I'm Arch Manning in 2027, am I just like, well, I'll go to South Florida for 2 years and then bounce? Like, I mean, I'm genuinely asking. Like, Lincoln Riley is famously a quarterback whisperer.
I think that might be the smarter move. I think that might be the smarter move, because if you go to one of those places where you're an elite quarterback recruit, they are probably going to pay you a decent amount of money, about the same as you'd make as a backup at a top program. And you might start. And if you do start and you're good, the next year you're making $5 million somewhere.
Walk that paradigm out, because here's what we're talking about. We're taking the highest end of high school talent in America, which is traditionally signed with the legacy helmet schools. We are sending them essentially to the group of five or elsewhere. And then potentially the player agent, you know, dynamic is going to walk into a South Florida or a Memphis or somewhere and say, get me good immediately. And I am going to walk in 1 year. And then we're going to essentially reopen the recruiting process.
And there will be a coach who says, a group of five level coach who says, I'm happy to do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we're essentially creating a new middle JUCO.
A new farm system. Yes.
Yeah, farm. It's a farm. Yeah. I mean, I remember
a story about a coach who was in the group of five who offered to nearby Power Five schools or Power Four schools, just let me be your farm system. You tell me who you want me to take, and I'll develop them. And you could, and it was turned down. It would have been a great idea.
You know, what's funny is, like, I think it was 2 years ago, or it was right before Kane Womack went to Alabama as the co-DC when he was still at the University of South Alabama. he was talking about how they would burn visits at South Al on five-star talent that was in the Mobile area. So they were committed to LSU or Alabama or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Because they were strategizing to catch them on the way down if there was an issue. Yeah. They wanted to transfer home in the old system.
Bounce backs.
It's sort of it's almost modifying that philosophy now to catch them on the way up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is an Arch Manning going to do this? Not Arch Manning specifically.
Manning doesn't have to do this. I think we need to use a different... Jared Curtis did this.
Well,
Vanderbilt is not a place that signs five-star quarterbacks.
Yeah, yeah.
He flipped from Georgia, which does sign five-star quarterbacks, so he could start at Vanderbilt.
So maybe it's a lower tier power school, or are you just using Vanderbilt
example? That just happened. It's real life. It happened.
Yeah, but here's the difference. They're a member of the same conference as these other schools that we're talking about, and they are talking about investing in him as a you know, 3-year strategy, 4-year strategy. They are not expecting him to develop
that's where the agents are going to want to park those players, because I don't think you go into it wanting to transfer. I think you go into it wanting it to work out where you are. And so if you do that at an SEC or a Big Ten school that does not traditionally sign those types of quarterbacks,
okay,
your guy may be the one who makes them that type of school.
All right, next question. What if, one, you do have to put skill position players, offensive lines, around these kids to develop? Are we going to get into such a microwave mindset that if after 1 year, the stat line doesn't look as good as someone thinks it should, then is he a failure? Is he considered to just not have it?
Yes.
This scares me because there are a lot of great quarterbacks in college and pro history that have a longer lead time in development. And we are essentially eliminating that because of our own impatience as a consumer base.
It's not even consumer base. It's not the consumer at all. It's the coaches who have to win. Like, I was doing homework
But why do the coaches have to win? Because we're saying make the playoff every year or you're on the hot seat.
Yeah, the pressure from the fan base.
We've said that every year since time began, not just the playoff, but the job's to win.
Yeah, but the job now, to go back to Tennessee for a second, Andy, this is what I've been proposing locally, is like, are you guys okay if you miss the playoff again? Because you are developing five-star
coach. I'm sure
they're
not.
Andy. Oh, yeah. No, they're crazier than 4 foot up a bull's ass. Like, they're so intense. They're like, they think this past year was a bad job. You lost your star quarterback before the season started in this incredibly unique circumstance.
Your star cornerback never played a game either.
And like, think about what you rolled over guys like James Pierce to the NFL. They still played really well. If this year Tennessee were to come out, if Josh Heupel comes out and says, we're going to go with one of those two kids, Faison or McIntyre, whatever, it doesn't matter. They had a camp battle. We're going to go. I'm going to put a young kid in to the SEC right away. I think Tennessee has Georgia Tech early in the schedule. Like, they have a pretty substantial slate, as everybody does now, right?
Around. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're probably going to drop two games before Halloween, and we're going to be like a fringe case at best to make the playoff. At the end of the year, if they have the same record, everyone's going to want Heupel's head on a pike, even though he's developing a potential five-star Heisman caliber quarterback for 2027 or 2028.
But even before this era really fully blossomed,
yeah,
I will tell you, and you know this from living where you live, there were lots of Tennessee fans who did not understand why he didn't bench Joe Milton in the middle of the 2023 season and start Nico.
Yeah.
So that's just how this works and Joe Milton. It's always worked.
Like Uncle Rico.
If Aguilar loses, you know, this court case, you know, last year we saw Tennessee go out and get Aguilar in the spring. Well, there's no spring portal. But you wonder if there will end up being a, quote, spring portal and unenroll and then enroll at the school. I'm anticipating.
And remember, why did Tennessee have to get Aguilar? Because their incumbent starting quarterback left.
Yeah, right.
Contract dispute.
Yeah.
Mm. It's almost like we need to put some guardrails up in a larger sort of central governance way and maybe just treat these kids like the employees they are, but I don't want to ruin the academic experience for anybody.
No, don't do that. They're all going to class.
Well, it's going to be very interesting, and you're going to see a lot of weird stories. And so I'm going to be talking to Brett Bielema on my On3 show, and I was doing some research on Caton Hauser, who's the quarterback that they signed out of East Carolina. And Caden Hauser's story is somewhat similar to this. Like, he signs with Michigan State out of high school. He winds up having to start as a redshirt freshman after all the Mel Tucker drama goes down. And they're basically just imploding, you know, after Tucker's fired that season. And nobody, you know, everybody's like, ah, you're no good. He goes to East Carolina. He's okay.
Yeah.
And then last year he's really good. And now he's going to be Illinois starting quarterback. And you're, to your point, he was thrust into a situation he wasn't ready for.
Right.
And that's a lot of these quarterbacks. And so, yeah, the development's probably going to have to come in a different place. It's probably going to have to come in the group of five, or, you know, maybe like a lower tier ACC or Big 12 program. And then they get poached and they go,
I mean, look, they get paid more. I'm being a little histrionic here because the market has already spoken. The sport is already telling me, like, the last two national title winning quarterbacks, they were certified pre-owned Hondas, right? You got a good deal on the lot. And then you were like, you know, I think like if you scrub this bad boy, like, we're, you know, like, this is a good
Will
family
Howard
vehicle.
Is a certified pre-owned Honda is.
Dude, you know, that's a Honda pilot ass quarterback. Let's be honest.
I think Fernando Mendoza is more like when I found the Raptor with 8,000 miles on it at my local gently used place.
No.
And got it for 30,000 less than if I'd have bought it 8,000 miles.
Fernando,
earlier.
Having done the media ops with him in the national title cycle and all that, his genuine behavior and his personality and his durability, he is a modern minivan. He's a really nice one. He has leather and he has the screens that flip up.
He's a certified pre-owned Odyssey. I love it.
I own right off camera is my driveway, and I own a wonderful Chrysler Pacifica. If you guys want to sponsor the show, it's a very nice vehicle. It's the nicest car I've ever owned because I bought it new. That's Fernando Mendoza. All right. Deanna, we can walk this out throughout. We got a lot of offseason to go. I'll give you a vehicle for every transfer quarterback. Fernando Mendoza, Chrysler Pacifica. And we love a Pacifica.
Ooh. All right. We'll find out what happens with these guys. Obviously, we're going to talk about it on the show late next week. That's when the hearings are scheduled for. Something needs to happen, because if these guys don't get in, they need to start preparing to go to the NFL. So they'll either get the injunction, and then the cases will, of course, drag out through the 2026 season, which will allow them to play, or they won't, and they're going to go to the NFL. And their schools will be scrambling to get younger quarterbacks ready. We will find out what happens. One thing we do know is when the college football playoff games will be played for the 2026 season. And they are going to be played deep into 2027. We'll talk about it when we come back. College Football Inquirer, and reminder, you can watch us on your television. Turn on that TV, that smart TV. Look on the home screen. You'll see the Yahoo Sports Network. Click on that. You get all of the beautiful shows from the Yahoo Sports Network. Or if you're on your laptop, your phone, your tablet, you name it, go to yahoosports.tv and you can watch us 24/7, 365. Now, there are only certain dates you can watch the college football playoff games, and now we know what those days are for 2026. They announced it this week. So, no more New Year's Eve. Wednesday,
Hallelujah.
December 30th.
Yeah.
For your Fiesta Bowl. And then they take a night off. And then you get a wall-to-wall Friday with the Cotton Bowl, the Peach Bowl, and the Rose Bowl.
Mm. It's easy to cover all. It's easy to cover two games then, right? We could cover the Wednesday game, Andy. You got a whole day to travel to get to another game on Friday. Obviously, New Year's Eve this year falls on a Thursday, and they're trying to avoid the Thursday night NFL game, as they have with these playing dates for the last few years. Just they kind of go out of their way to avoid getting matched up with the NFL, and this, the way the calendar fell this coming year, means that we have a Wednesday playoff game a day before New Year's Eve.
So the New Year's Day lineup, Andy, can you do it sequentially, like by order? Is Cotton's in the morning and then Sugar would be in the evening?
No.
That's usually
sugar
how
it is. A semifinal game. So
that's right.
And Rose Bowl. I'm assuming Rose Bowl will be in the middle in its traditional time slot.
Yeah. Ross, you're not. Yeah. You're lazy if you can't do the Cotton in the morning and then go to DFW and get to. Yeah. Well, you can't fly. Can you fly directly into Pasadena?
Can I do three? Yeah. Can I do three?
Yes. You could theoretically games that day. You could hit the Peach Bowl. Yeah. Now, you'd have to leave pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But there will probably be a flight between Atlanta and DFW or vice versa. I can't remember. We don't know which was first.
Yeah, so, a helicopter might be necessary in some of these cities. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me just take Yahoo One.
Let's go, Ross. Come on.
Yeah. But the question is, does the TV work on the plane so you can watch the Rose Bowl? Because if not, the whole plan is messed up. So all those games, January 1st, Friday. The first semifinal is not until January 14th.
God. Yeah, that's
Thursday, January 14th.
That's a really
And then January
really
15th would be your Sugar Bowl.
That really set fire to a lot of people and a lot of coaches when they saw that come out. Because, of course, normal schools are a week in. Some places are probably 10 days in to their spring semester. And then you know you have the portal around going on, well, allegedly for right now. You have the portal around that time too. It's just too long, right? And the championship game is what, 23rd, 24th?
25th.
25th in Vegas, boys. I mean,
what are we doing? So we've gotten, and we talked about this before, maybe about the calendar changes coming. And one of the ideas is to make week zero, week one, right? Shift up the whole regular season and shift everything by a week. But I'll remind everybody, there are two reasons that that's an issue, because you move the semifinals from the second week of January, and you move them to New Year's Day. Instead of having four quarterfinal bowls on New Year's Day, you'd have two semifinals, and the bowls don't like that. And TV doesn't like that.
Nobody
either.
Cares what the bowls think.
I can't do this because I can't avoid. I there's too much profanity. Andy, handle it. I'm gonna have a seizure.
Nobody cares.
Well, TV doesn't like it either.
The bowls don't matter.
Yeah,
because they want three games. They want three games on New Year's Day at least, and not two.
Then put the Citrus Bowl on New Year's Day.
I can't do this because I do it too often on the show, and I don't want it to become tropey. But like, I've already screamed about all this stuff, and because then Ross will very soberly, like a good reporter, recite why this is a problem. And then we start screaming about bowl interference. This is where I'm at. When I got the press release in the email, I scanned it really fast and went, "Oh God, they finally have figured out that nobody really wants to do this on New Year's Eve." And then I paused and I saw Wednesday, December 30th, and I went, "Oh my God, they're only doing this because they're hiding from the NFL."
Can I bring something up? Because this has actually been in the news this week.
Yeah.
Remember what transaction got government approval this week? Maybe ESPN having a stake of itself bought.
Sorry. There's a lot of jokes by the NFL. Our producer didn't want me to make when you set that up, so I just stayed quiet.
Yeah, so... You know, ESPN sort of absorbs the NFL network, gets Red Zone, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The NFL gets an equity stake in ESPN.
Yeah.
So really going to help. The NFL is now part owner of the college football playoff rights.
Yeah. Yeah. That's ESPN's editorial objectivity. It just looks better than ever, honestly.
We'll have the journalism discussion next segment. But would it not behoove the NFL as a co-owner of the CFP rights to play ball with college football on this thing and try to figure out a way to maximize viewership between the NFL games and the CFP?
He claimed in a press conference this week, I believe, Roger Goodell, that he would play ball. If they needed help, we're here to help.
Look,
and we're here to help because we have a financial stake in it now.
Look,
but college sports has asked for help from them for a while now. Not necessarily gotten it. All they've gotten
is more games on their traditional college days. Didn't make them any money.
Quick self promo. When we did Who Killed College Football, the miniseries, we did, you know, each episode was a suspect. We did an entire episode on the NFL's tactical avoidance of any involvement in their free minor league system of college football over the decades. It is hilariously glaring. Like, the NFL will olay out of anything to do with college football because they don't want any sort of connection. In fact, Andy, what you bring up may be the most official sort of tie that these entities have ever had together. However, it might be – I can't believe I'm saying this. It might be a good thing because Darth Vader makes a lot of good points, man. Like Roger Goodell can actually Roger Goodell and the NFL lead the entire world of sports in efficient and smart scheduling. Like the way they lay their entire year out, not just their football games. So it would behoove college football to get its unorganized ass over to, I was going to do the address in Manhattan, the offices, and just say, hey guys, could we somehow integrate this so we don't have this janked up playoff?
It would be great. Now, the conspiracy theories are going to be incredible because it is the NFL owning an equity stake in ESPN.
I mean,
which
that's
does
already
not
there.
Have any Big Ten broadcast rights.
That's awesome. I love it. Oh man, I'm excited
now,
already.
Does the NFL work with all the networks that televise Big Ten games? Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. Yeah,
very much so. But
I don't know if that dog will hunt as aggressively, Andy. I think it's just going to be more. I have
the utmost faith in the tinfoil hat message boarders to make this into something. But
yeah.
I do think the NFL having a financial stake in the success of the college football playoff television product might result in some more cooperative scheduling.
If there is an NFL conspiracy, then, I mean, maybe that'll finally help the SEC win a national championship.
You felt where I was going with that. I appreciate that.
Bell high, baby.
So, Andy, what would the NFL do? What are the if you're Goodell and you're trying to help right now?
I doubleheader some things, like strategically doubleheader some stuff.
I think this
so
could also
have one leading into the other.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think this could help tremendously on, like Ross, you mentioned earlier about is zero going to become one? How are we going to transition into football season? If those parties would sit down, the problem is you just don't have who represents college football in this equation. That the biggest problem is. You know, Ross, if you were to report on this, you know, hey, NFL has a league office. It's going to be these individuals. What individual?
The CFP board of managers.
From this flotilla of idiot pirates that is college football is going to show up and be like, yes, sir, on behalf of this confederation of idiocy, we would love to work with you. Our sport is so jacked up at an executive level. I mean, this is why if I was the NFL, I would avoid dealing with this. But they're going to bump into each other. And the front and at the end of the season. And I think we have to, this schedule, all joking aside, is ludicrous. From a coach's perspective, the amount of time on and off in between these games is not, we haven't even discussed, because we've done it on other episodes, all the other things that are going on. The portal, coaching staff changes, all, you know, hire, fire, all that kind of stuff. This eventually will have to come to a head. This is where I agree with the trads that we really just need to work on. New Year's Day is probably never going to work for an ultimate like championship game weekend, like, you know, doing it in Pasadena, like we've joked, but we do have to claw it back. And eventually we're going to have to kill the conference championship game.
Yeah. That's they're on the way to dying. It's just kind of a matter of when, not if in its place will probably be some kind of play-in round, or you take that week off and move the whole playoff schedule up a week. I mean, that's the most likely scenario. Our buddy Brett McMurphy posted this. TJ had reminded me about it. NFL playoffs, 13 games are played over 30 days. College football playoffs, 11 games played over 39 days.
Over 79 days.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
It's
we
getting
into
to
a
like
new in, year and a new semester.
It's like, you know how the NBA playoffs run for like 60 days? It's getting to feel like that. It really is.
And I don't mind, like, I don't mind the season being long. I like it.
No.
College football is still the shortest season of any of them.
It's good for business.
Of any of the major American sports. I think that's also part of why people love it so much is it is that drug that you cannot get year round.
Yeah.
But there's a way to do it more efficiently.
Two shows in a row.
I'm saying just move the window. Keep the window the same size. Just move the window.
Two shows in a row where you're doing drug references. Do you need to talk?
I might. I have the sniffles. I actually need some drugs to help me through this.
You know?
So,
how about this? But, college football is the Zen. We'll go with a low level. Like just use the Zen. Sponsorship. Sponsorship.
You gonna do the reads?
Absolutely.
Good. Okay. Yeah. I've done a lot of reads for a lot of things, so I think there's pretty much nothing I would read for.
If you've worked in the podcasting industry, doing an ad read for Zen would be a step up from some of the stuff we've done before.
That's a high
there's no male performance enhancement involved.
Exactly.
All right. Derail the show.
Speaking
two,
of enhancements,
two in a row.
I am going to enhance the there week we one schedule that we criticized thoroughly on the last episode. I was given a homework assignment to figure out how to get the Oklahoma-Michigan game into week one. I think I figured it out. Be right back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and if you listen to Tuesday's episode, you know that week one in 2026 is, well, we should respell it W-E-A-K one, because
got him.
The level of games, not great, Bob.
No.
The quality of games is not good. And we're trying to figure out, what's the big noon kickoff game? What's Fox's big noon game on week one? And Boise State, Oregon is probably the most interesting matchup involving a Big Ten or a Big 12 team, which is where what Fox has to choose from. But that one, Oregon's not going to let you kick off at 9 a.m. local. I think there's probably other West Coast teams that would. I don't think Oregon's going to do that. So I'll go with what Fox has done in past years, and it's like, okay, we'll default to Ohio State and whoever they're playing. Because Ohio State fans come in mass no matter what.
Yep.
Ball State, Ohio State. That's your big noon game right now. We can't have that. We cannot have that. There is, however, a very good non-conference game emanating from a Big Ten stadium in week two, and that would be Oklahoma going to Michigan. We got to get that in week one. That's your big noon game in week one.
All right.
We got, and you guys assigned me homework of figure out how to do it. And now, in most years, this would have been like a jigsaw, like a Saw level jigsaw puzzle, trying to figure out how to move this, and I got to move this, and I got to move this, and I got to move this. But the SEC going to 9 conference games, among other things, a lot of conference realignment, has helped this process just a little bit. There's actually two fairly easy ways to do this, to move this Oklahoma-Michigan game to week one. So for those who haven't studied the schedules, Oklahoma is playing UTEP in week one. Michigan is playing Western Michigan in week one. So here's what you do. Right now, if you want to do it the really easy way, and I don't have to move a bunch of games around, I don't have to be calling 18 schools to make this happen. The MAC has not put out its conference schedule and isn't supposed to until the beginning of next month. The Mountain West, to which UTEP is moving, also has not put out its conference schedule. So I just call the Mountain West and the MAC and be like, hey, Oklahoma and the SEC say they will give your team some bye games if you can give UTEP a bye on October 3rd. That would be Oklahoma's current bye week.
What am I offering the Mountain West and the MAC? Like we're going to give you more
SEC
homecoming
teams
games?
We'll pay your teams to come lose to them.
Okay. Who are we trotting out? Is it going to be the teams involved? Like, are we going to make Oklahoma sign
hey, Tennessee, Georgia, and Arkansas, next spot you got, it goes to UTEP.
But
they want
those
games anyway. They want some body bag games anyway.
But we're trying to help Fox. Why would we do the SEC?
We're trying to help Oklahoma. We want to make Oklahoma the most viewed team that week.
So
we're thinking
the
long game here.
Oklahoma's going to ask Tennessee for a favor.
It's not an ask.
Okay,
all right, they'll do it. Well.
Keep going.
Or Oklahoma can just say, "Hey, we'll sign UTEP up for two more games."
I think
that's really all you need to say.
Yeah,
Oklahoma,
I feel like that.
Yeah, that's probably probably the solution. Yeah.
Okay. So you got to give UTEP a bye on October 3rd in conference play. And that way UTEP can go play in Norman that week.
I'm sure that can be arranged.
Yes.
Yes.
That would be easier than asking Danny White for a favor.
Now, the easier one is the Big Ten and Fox. Fox will say Big Ten and Big 12 teams.
Yeah.
Will sign up Western Michigan for two body bag games down the road. If you, the MAC, will just move Western Michigan's bye to October 10th or place Western Michigan's bye on October 10th. That way they can play in Ann Arbor on October 10th.
Okay.
Now, Oklahoma and Michigan may have a problem with this because now their bye is in week two and they just have a slog the rest of the way. So they may not like that. But
yeah.
No Oklahoma second bye.
Plays UTEP in the middle of its SEC schedule. Western Michigan or Michigan plays Western Michigan. It's not the same as having to play an SEC or Big Ten opponent in that week.
We don't have two byes in the season this year.
I thought there were two byes next year. No?
Only if you play in week zero. And I did think about that. I looked at Hawaii's schedule, which, by the way, not complete because we don't have a Mountain West schedule. But I did because if you play against Hawaii, whether it's home or away, you do have the opportunity to play in week zero. So you could schedule a game there. The other option, which I actually think is the one they would do, is UTEP in week two plays Texas Southern. Western Michigan in week two plays Monmouth. So they've got their bye games. They've got, you know, reached down a level and they're paying somebody to come play them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You buy out the Texas Southern UTEP game and you buy out the Monmouth Western Michigan game. You offer Texas Southern and Monmouth. You're like, hey, we'll fly Texas Southern to Jersey. We'll fly Monmouth to Houston.
Mm-hmm.
You guys can play each other in week two. You move Oklahoma UTEP to week two. You move Western Michigan Michigan to week two.
Yes. Boom.
Oklahoma, I like that. Michigan's in week one. I think that's the one they do.
I think that's the one. Yeah, I think so.
You did it, Andy.
Yep.
You did. Yes.
And also, they need the money. So, yeah.
They do need the money. And I think that's one of those where I don't think Texas Southern, it's one thing when these teams go and play like Texas or they go play Texas A&M. I don't think them missing out on the UTEP experience is going to derail their season.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I definitely like door number two because the bye in week two is, I feel like one of those coaching staffs would probably throw up their hands and say no.
Both coaching staffs would be like, nope, we're not doing that. Non-starter.
We think because momentum is such a much more of a tangible concept with college rosters. You would go from summer camp, major game week one, off week two, and then you're probably moving straight into conference play. They wouldn't want that. I think getting the G5 game in week two would be like the ideal circumstance.
Yeah. So sorry, Texas Southern and Monmouth, but listen, if you fly Monmouth to Texas Southern, like, there's so many good plays. Like, you have Blood Brothers Barbecue cater your team dinner Friday night.
the food.
Said it this way.
Incentive of the food.
There's so many good options. And look, Fox is footing the bill, so run it up.
Yeah, right.
What if Fox was like, could somehow air some of their content or something like that? You know, like,
that's the other thing I was thinking with the FCS school.
This is where, because I have homework too from our producer TJ to create more televised events and sort of the college football calendar as like a culture. We talked about, because we don't have signing day anymore. That was yesterday. Mm. No one cared.
Yeah.
This is where, if I was Fox and I thought a little bit meta for a second, I would make all of this transparent. And I would say, this is what I would turn it into like a Big Noon segment. I would get the programs at Texas Southern and Monmouth involved because they would love the freaking shine, right? They would love the PR to have that exposure and actually telegraph, hey, this is what we had to do. This is what we're doing.
So Michael Strahan, who's Texas Southern's most famous football alum.
He is, yeah.
He's on Good Morning America, but he does the Fox pregame show for the NFL. So you bring in Strahan. He already works for you. You bring in Strahan to host this Monmouth-Texas Southern game. You have Megan Thee Stallion, another Texas Southern grad, perform at halftime.
Wow.
Let's go.
I didn't know Texas Southern produced such celebrities.
Well, Megan Thee Stallion's an interesting story because she actually hit it big and was selling a bunch of albums and got very famous and very rich before finishing her degree and went back to finish her degree just to say, hey, I did this. So
I'm feeling a little threatened that you're throwing off the show more than me. And I mean, like, I'm taking this as a challenge.
This is legitimate. I'm giving Fox alternative programming ideas to help make this happen. Some of them,
they may be listening. We may end up having this happen, and it all goes back to the pod, you know?
Because this, remember, you're losing your Big Noon game week too.
Like, yeah. What are they going to do there? Like, I guess we pull it up real fast.
That's the part I didn't look at is
yeah, yeah.
Now, where do they go to?
Iowa State is always week two. You could always go there. You could always, like, they've done it. They did it last year.
You're right.
Go to Alaska and just do that. Yeah.
Yep. See, Godfrey's always got it figured out.
Yeah. Mm. It is so weird in my brain because it's like, again, a Southern wiring to have your rivalry game that early, but that helps. It helps so much to always have that in week two.
I actually wouldn't mind Oregon, Oklahoma State in that spot because I think Aaron Morse can make Oklahoma State significantly better
against Oregon in week two. I like the hire long term.
It's Stillwater.
Week two might be a bloodletting still. So
probably. Okay. All right. We'll go.
Safe
we'll go with Iowa.
I have the week two schedule right here. I have the week two schedule right here. So all I need is a Big Ten or Big 12 home game. Oh, border. Nope. It depends on where the border war is at.
That one.
Who gets the rights to the border war?
I believe that one's in Kansas. That one's in Lawrence this year, I think. So you could play that one.
Well, that may not feel prestigious on a national level. I don't know if y'all have ever rubbed up against or covered, like, when those two fan bases are around each other, that gets Egg Bowl level stupid.
It's pretty nasty.
And they've been fun games. Like, the last one they played was a fun game.
It was a really good game, yeah.
You have a lot of interesting
candidates.
Missouri
came back. Yeah, it was a good game.
Yeah. So you have a lot of interesting candidates. Oh, A&M and Arizona State. I don't know where that game's at. That one may be in College Station, so we can't do that one.
Let me make sure the border war is not the border war is in Lawrence.
Okay, so do that or El Asico. Do either one.
Okay. We have solved Fox's problems for the first 2 weeks of the season. You're welcome.
Yeah. You're welcome, Fox.
Man, are we gonna get
this
from
any pod?
Why are we doing
like Eric Shanks and Jordan Bizan are like, these idiots.
Why are we doing this for free? We need to send an invoice to Vox. To Fox.
Consultants.
Oh,
there we go.
Keep it in.
Fox. What's the difference? God.
Not much. Trust me.
Yeah.
Not much.
Before we go, guys, I do want to, because of the industry we work in, I wouldn't mind talking to you guys a little bit about what happened at the Washington Post. And I think that's probably something a lot of the people who listen to the show would be interested in. Godfrey, you obviously were writing columns at the Washington Post, but they eliminated their sports department, which for those of us in the industry, like if you went back 20 years and said, you know, the Washington Post is going to stop having a sports department in 2026, it would have been just, you know, heads exploding. But
yeah,
that's where we are. That's where we're at. So,
Ross, I know you have a lot of friends. I mean, because you live in D.C., that had jobs and now they don't.
Yeah. I was with a few of them this past weekend, actually on a trip. It really sucks. And like Andy said, to just lose an entire department, is hard to believe at a outlet that's been so important, for political reasons. Yeah. You know, everybody always goes back to the Post for political reasons, but they had some of the greatest, you know, writers and reporters on their sports staff as well. So the whole thing is just sad and sort of indicative of the place that, the scary place that journalism is in and has been in for the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah. And we had multiple arguments break out on social media about why this happened and all this. And, you know, I don't get as fired up about it as I used to, other than being sad for the very talented people who lost their jobs.
Yeah.
Because I do understand the economic realities of it. And, you know, it's hard because I look at my own career and I thought that I would work for a newspaper my entire life when I got out of college. And I thought I'd be a high school reporter and then maybe a beat writer. And then maybe someday I could be a columnist. And that felt like a great career. And then all of that really, really changed. You know, the second paper I worked for, the Tampa Tribune, went out of business not long after I left. Like, you know, not because I left, but because it was headed that way. And, you know, unfortunately, the market for writing really good stories is not what it used to be.
Yeah.
That's why I do a lot of shows.
Yeah.
That's why we're, that's why
I used to write a lot of stories.
And
I still write stories, but like the type of stories I wrote at Sports Illustrated, the market for that is pretty thin right now.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as college goes, myself and Chuck Culpepper were the last bylines for college football in the Post. So I was with the Washington Post at the national championship game that we just covered. And that feels, I haven't really processed this yet. I know that I have, much like Mr. Staples, been angry for so long. And it's, you know, the way that the market has shifted has kind of defined my career when I started as a professional, as it has all of ours, really. But I am not going to curse the dark right now. I shine a light and just say that, you know, I spent 9 years of my youth, my formative years, in the DC suburbs. And the Washington Post was, it felt unattainable when I went to journalism school. Like, it was so important. It was so, it was really, like, I remember it would show up at our house and y'all, it was like this thick. It was amazing. Like, the Sunday Washington Post. And I would read every section, style, politics, everything. And it just, it felt so important. And to get a, just to get the opportunity, I'm really cynical about our industry and I don't hold a lot of sacred cows. And I am usually the one yelling at our colleagues to not be nostalgic or sentimental because you have to survive. You have to like keep going and reinvent yourself. But, you know, for a tiny instant, I do have this kind of pang where I was like, oh yeah, I wrote for the Washington Post. The problem is now it's that I wrote for the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Past that, I haven't really formed a lot of thoughts on it yet. My thoughts are just with my colleagues. So, you know, I was a columnist. I would just contribute a column. That's it. It was not my job. I'm here at Yahoo. I run a production company. I do a lot of other things. So I am in the gratitude phase of the loss where I'm really happy to say that, yeah, I wrote for the Washington Post. That means something to me.
Yeah. And the people who were in that department, and I just, there's so many talented people. Like Rick Mace is at the Olympics right now. Like I remember meeting Rick Mace when he went to the Orlando Sentinel in his 20s. He was coming from the Albuquerque Journal. And like you would read his stuff that early and you're like, oh my God, I'll never be able to write as well as this guy. And they had so many people like that. And like Tashawn Reed, who I worked with at the Athletic, had just left the Athletic to be the Commanders writer there. And it's just, it sucks. And so, yeah, thinking about you guys today and
yeah,
what happens next, you know, the three of us, we've had to change a lot as we've gone through our careers and we're going to have to keep on changing. And we hope that for you out in the audience, that we're giving you what you want and that you like listening to us, watching us, and you know, the gathering of information is still a pretty valuable thing. So
yep,
just remember that.
Yeah, we're going to keep doing this. We've had to evolve a lot. I don't want to belabor this point, but I will say this, if you're listening or watching this, support media, support what you like. You have to put money down like any other transaction for any other quality product. Put your money where your interest is. I know like, you know, this show is free, but a lot of them aren't. I run an entire production company that, and a big part of what we do is subscription based, phantomisland.show. Support good media. Support, and also, you know, it's getting harder and harder to do investigative work. The thing that scares me is not people like us. It's that those long-form investigative pieces take a long time, and it requires a level of economic support that's not available right now because we've devolved into this billionaire class of sort of instant gratification. And that's what scares me the most. So support good journalism.
And that's like, we talk about sports. Local news matters a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of people willing to pay for it right now. And it's whether it's your kid's high school team getting covered or like Godfrey was talking about doing investigations that may root out corruption in your city hall or in your county government. Like that's the thing that matters. That's what makes it important to your life.
And that's been the most sort of baffling part of the Post cuts is they're cutting a lot of local reporters. Mm-hmm. And even on the news side, we have friends here that one of them on the Metro desk got cut and she She covers like local education. You know, it's kind of important, right?
Very important.
And it just, they seem to want to do much more only national type reporting. And it just doesn't make any sense to me at all, leaving dry local reporting and local news.
So,
well,
I want to spend this positive for a second, Andy.
Yeah, go ahead.
I keep this on my desk all the time. So I only put stickers on this water bottle that are journalism entities that are subscription-based. So the Nashville Banner, where I live, they realized a couple years ago, hey, no one's sitting at the courts. No one's going and checking the docket. So nonprofit journalism. If you're in the, I know in the DMV, the Baltimore Banner does a great job. Look, you got to find it. You got to pay for it, guys. Like it's all over. My friend David at FOIA Ball, like who just basically files FOIAs in college football and tries to bring some of this to light. You got to pay for your local journalism if you want to keep it around.
Well, there's a market now, and it's interesting because this is the cycle, and this is where I got cynical yesterday.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, you know what would be really effective is if somebody would create an entity that covered the pro teams in Washington now, since they don't have high quality local beat coverage anymore. So it covers the Commanders and the Wizards and the Nationals. And then I remembered that was the original idea for The Athletic. And they did that for a while. Yeah. And then they sold to the New York Times and they stopped. So like that's the problem right there. Is you just get, you know. So like Godfrey said, like Ross said, if you like it, support it. If you feel like it adds value to your life, please support it, because if you don't, it's gone. And that is your uplifting end.
Yeah, such a
cheery
end.
We promise we will get back to the tomfoolery of comparing quarterback transfers to various gently used vehicles next time.
And finding Big Noon Kickoffs games.
Tune in Tuesday to find out who is a Kia Sorento.
I don't know. I mean, we might have all been hired as Fox executives by Tuesday. They're going to be like, you guys had some great ideas. I'm looking forward to Ball State, Ohio State, personally, week one.
Like it. There you go. Supporting the Mac.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
G5 football.
Can we move it to Muncie? Is that's my next idea. All right. We'll see you Tuesday.